The date is July 13th, 1990, and we're watching Ghost. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One. This is the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Sam Wheat to my Oda Mae Brown.
That was an interesting choice. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
You know, back with Point Break and Roadhouse, I made you the Swayze character. I figured we just had to keep you on the Swayze train. Yeah.
I see. Okay, gotcha. That makes sense. At first, I was like, well, Whoopi's black, so maybe.
Yeah, but she's also a woman, so, you know, it doesn't matter, right? We're all fluid on this. We'll do everything. So this week, we are celebrating that day of love, Valentine's Day, which is why we picked a romantic movie this week. But as any listener knows from the way we talk about loving musical theater and not knowing anything about cars, that Colin and I are the manliest macho men that there could possibly ever be. So we were afraid of the tidal wave of testosterone that would wash over this episode if it was just him and I. So to balance out that concern, we brought in a first-time guest, a woman I had the pleasure of performing with back in December when I appeared in Elf the Musical. Please welcome my friend Marissa Dingle.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Welcome. This is exciting to have you on here. Now, I brought you in to interject a little estrogen here for us. Are you a big romantic movie fan? Do you like the rom-cons? Are you a chick flick chick, or do you like the action stuff?
I mean, I like both, but I'm definitely a sucker for a good rom-com.
Okay. And I mean, not really the calm in this case. How do you feel about something like Ghost, where, you know, it's the rom dram?
It's a weird combo, but I still dig it.
Right on. Well, this week we are looking back at July 1990 when the movies and theaters were Die Hard 2, Die Harder, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, Days of Thunder, Ghost Dad, and, of course, our movie for today, Ghost, which earned $505.7 million on a $22 million budget, making it the highest-grossing movie of the year. And also, interestingly, Pretty Woman came out the same year and was $463 million. So, you know, we've got $1 billion worth of romantic movies back in 1990.
Wow. Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want spoilers in your face, like clay in your face, I wanted to work the clay in there somehow. Anyways, I don't think it worked. But anyways, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you haven't watched this movie, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I do have three. The first is, a love that will last forever.
Two on the nose for me.
Two on the nose? Number two, you will believe. You will, Colin. You will believe. You think you're not going to believe? You will believe.
I don't know about that.
too aggro.
It's an aggressive catchphrase, yeah. Well, finally, number three, before Sam was murdered, he told Molly he'd love and protect her forever.
Whoa.
We all know that the right tagline to have used was just ditto, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I should have just put that.
Well, these may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
All right. Where's my notes? I should have practiced reading this because I basically just wrote it as one giant run-on sentence, so
awesome.
Here we go. Banker Sam Wheat and his best gal Molly Jensen have just moved into their fancy new Manhattan apartment, and life is as good as it can be. Life is nothing but playful banter, longing looks, and pottery-fueled sexcapades, until one day, it's all over. After a night on the town, Molly and Sam are attacked by a mugger. Sam tries to fight him off. A shot rings out. The mugger flees with Sam in pursuit, but he gets away, leaving Sam to turn around and find that he's been shot. And worse, he's a ghost! He watches himself bleed to death in Molly's arms. Now on the other side of the veil, Sam learns how to ghost from some other spirits and finds help in the form of a psychic named Oda Mae Brown, who discovers she actually does have the gift and isn't a con artist like she thought. With Oda Mae's help, Sam reaches out to Molly to warn her about the man who killed him, only to find out that there's more to the story and that it was in fact Sam's best friend Carl who set him up to be killed, fearing he would uncover his shady money laundering scheme. Will Sam learn how to poltergeist in time to protect Molly not only from Carl's murderous agenda, but also his far too soon, considering she's your dead friend's best girl, sexual advances? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
You really got into channeling like your inner Aaron Sorkin or like Gilmore Girls. Like you tried to cram a lot of extra adjectives in there, and yeah, that was a mouthful, but well done. Well done, Colin.
Thank you. Sometimes you know, you just get the inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is one of those movies that I know back when it came out on video. That was back when I was a subscriber of the Columbia House Video Company, and Ghost was one of the movies that was the movie of the month, and, you know, if you don't mail back the thing with Columbia House, you end up having to keep the movie and spending something ridiculous like $40 for it. So Ghost was one that I owned. I did love Ghost, though. I remember it was a cool white video cassette, and I remember that was one of those trends that there was back in the 90s. Is I remember the Ninja Turtles soundtrack came in different colors. You could buy an orange, a purple, a blue, or a red, depending on which turtle you were supporting. So it was a gimmick. I remember my white videotape of this, though, and I have watched this movie many, many times. I did love this movie. I've got a soft spot for this movie. Marissa, as our resident female this week, what is your younger self's experience with the movie Ghost?
As a younger girl, I was obsessed with this movie. Like, I loved it.
Yeah.
I was introduced to it from my older sister, I think. That was my first time watching it, and I thought, oh, how romantic, I love this. But rewatching it, I don't know. I love most of it.
Okay. Colin, what about you? Do you have a history with the movie Ghost?
I've never seen this movie before. But again, watching this movie was interesting for me because the only things I know about it are from pop culture references to it.
Okay.
So there are things that I like recognize or like knew that like just from pop culture that I knew were from Ghost from having seen them like echoed in multiple movies and TV shows, but I'd never actually seen the movie myself.
Yeah, I remember the movie The Naked Gun, I think it was the third one, 33 and a third. They had a complete ripoff of the pottery scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it was all over.
Yeah. But funny enough, it's like for whatever reason, I remember the time when Ghost came out, even though I've never seen it. I remember when it was coming out just because I remember, like, sort of those things. I would have been 4 years old, 4 or 5 years old, and I can, like, vividly for some reason remember hearing the older women in my life talk about this movie and sexy Patrick Swayze was and how romantic it was and all that, and just gushing over it and all that, and just being like, you know, I was into Batman and Ninja Turtles, so I was like, blah, like, get that out of my face. So that's probably why I never really ventured around to watching it, but
yeah,
it is kind of, it always sits in my mind for that reason, just because I remember it being kind of like one of those like cultural touchstone movies at the time that it came out.
Yeah. Now, Marissa, you may not know this, but like Colin and I have recently discovered a couple Patrick Swayze movies, and we have fallen deeply in love with Patrick Swayze. So this is also special for me to be showing Colin a different side of Patrick Swayze by bringing him Ghost, because Roadhouse and Point Break are the ones where Colin has previously seen what Patrick Swayze is capable of. First, I'll ask you, do you have a favorite Patrick Swayze movie, or what do you feel about Patrick Swayze?
It's really funny you ask, because you're talking about like the Roadhouse side of him, where I'm familiar with the Dirty Dancing side of him.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Probably like the top. I mean, such a classic, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, when it comes to like a romantic movie, what are your leanings? Is it the rom-com? And if so, do you have a favorite? Or do you have like a Titanic or an Armageddon? Like, what kind of romantic movies do you like?
Definitely like the Dirty Dancing. Pearl Harbor, even though it's not really like...
Okay.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the romantic like tragedy. So I think Ghost kind of like falls in there, even though... Like, what is Ghost? It, like, it borders, like, horror movie with those, like, creepy characters from hell, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's border, but, like, yeah, the romantic tragedies is usually where I'm at.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Leonardo DiCaprio Romeo and Juliet? Are either of you fans of that one from back in the day?
Love it. One of my favorite movies by far, for sure. That will make its way onto this podcast at some point.
I would so love to come back if that makes it onto this podcast.
Okay. We'll see. Yeah. Well, let's jump into the one we're here for. Let's jump into Ghost. It's directed by Jerry Zucker, which, interestingly, considering I said that there's a spoof in Naked Gun from this, he is the producer of the Naked Gun. That's one of those things Jerry Zucker is famous for. He's the director of Airplane and Top Secret. Like, he comes from the spoof comedy world. But it's produced by Lisa Weinstein, no relation, and written by Bruce Joel Rubin. And so we open this movie on, just like Marissa was saying, with the idea that there's a horror vibe. The very opening has some intensely creepy music going on, yeah. And it had me going, and like, it tries to like jump scare you with the title of Ghost coming up on the screen, and it's just like, holy shit, like, what kind of movie are they trying to market right off the beginning here?
Yeah, that was exactly my thought. I was like, if somebody was watching this movie and had never heard of it, like me, I was like, did I get the right movie? Like, am I, like, it seems, because all I know, basically, is the clay sex scene, and so I was kind of just like, this seems like, am I watching Scream, or am I watching a romantic movie? But, like Marissa said, this movie does, it's one of those weird things about kind of those 90s movies, I think, where it's almost genreless, or like, genre fluid maybe would be a better term, where it's like you don't really know. I wouldn't know how to classify this movie exactly.
Yeah, like, because it opens up with that bit with Carl in the elevator. I mean, after we get our sweaty men breaking down the walls of this house. But, I mean, he's got that whole bit in the elevator about the contagious disease he has. Whoa, yeah. Too soon, COVID. But but it's absolutely hilarious, and you think you're in for this comedy, and he's such a good buddy, and they, you know, give him such a dark turn. I do want to go back to that renovation scene, though, in the beginning. They're knocking down that wall. I have a question that I've always wanted to ask people and have never had people around whenever this question comes up. Those kinds of walls that they always knock down in movies, where it's like the thin wooden slats instead of like proper like drywall and studs. Have you ever seen houses that actually physically have that? That's the only kind of wall you ever see in a movie. You know what I'm talking about? Looks kind of like a wall of Venetian blinds once they get, you know, in behind the drywall.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm not well versed as despite my manly facade, as Sean stated at the top of the show, I'm not really well versed in contracting and contracting knowledge. So.
Yeah.
It's funny you ask that, because I was like, ooh, this is a testosterone-y question. I have no idea.
Well, to get back, to give you a less testosterone-y question, in the opening bit, before they like break through the walls and it's got the spooky music and then it transforms to romantic, did either of you get Phantom of the Opera vibes with the way like things were covered with sheets and dusty as it was going through the attic of this place?
Funny enough, I was gonna say I got Casper vibes.
Casper,
like
vibes.
It reminded me of the house from Casper, and I thought, I was like, oh, maybe this is like the ghost, like maybe it's like a haunted house. Like I had no idea how this movie was gonna roll out. I thought,
yeah,
kind of like as it went along, my prediction. I guess because I always try to like predict what's going to happen in a movie. But at this opening scene, I assumed he was going to die and like haunt the like haunt the house almost.
Okay. Like he was going to be tethered to this one place instead of the person.
Yeah, like I thought the way they open with the house and the fact that they're moving into a house, a new house, and it does have that creepy vibe, that the actual house was going to play more of a thing to it, I guess. Like almost there's this movie I remember, it's another romantic comedy, I think, with like Reese Witherspoon, where she like dies in her house and then haunts it and falls in love with some guy or something who moves into the apartment after.
Oh, isn't it Matthew McConaughey that's in that as well?
Probably. I mean,
like it's around that time. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I don't remember specifically what it's called.
Yeah, I'm hopping on my phone here as fast as I can.
Let's see, Reese Witherspoon. Just Like Heaven, I think.
Is it Just Like Heaven?
Never heard of it.
Yeah. A lonely landscape architect falls for the spirit of the beautiful woman who used to live in his new apartment. It's Reese Witherspoon and Mark Ruffalo is the male lead.
Oh, Mark Ruffalo. Nice. So in that one, she's stuck to a place, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I kind of thought it was going to be like a similar thing where, I mean, yeah. The sad thing about these ghost movies is, like, you always kind of wonder if by the end there's going to be a way that they manage to come back to life.
Yeah.
And they never do. Except in Casper, I guess. Well, no, even in Casper, he can only do it for the one dance, and then there's the creepy, can I keep you line, and then that has to be the worst line in movies, but anyways, we've digressed from ghosts too far.
Have you ever noticed that Patrick Swayze wears his pants really high on his waist?
No.
Is it just me that feels like he's wearing his pants really pulled up?
I think that just used to be the style.
Okay. I just feel like every movie he's rocking the, I don't know, dad jean look or something.
Hmm. Yeah, I never really noticed. I'll have to watch it again and take notice of his fashion. I was just get too focused on Patrick Swayze's hair and just that slick, slick oiled back cut.
He's a handsome man. We know he's a handsome man.
The one part of this movie that really struck me as kind of the time, like I was, even though it's, I mean, it's not that, I guess it's 30 years old now, but I feel like I don't remember the 90s as well as I think sometimes, but when you really see the computers that the bankers are working on, and it's this that just black and green text, and they're so small, like they're the size of my iPad, basically. This, but like they're the size of a toaster almost. And then even there's the point where he's like looking for phone numbers or addresses. He just has this like little pocketbook that he's scrolling through, and they're talking about using Rolodexes and all this stuff. Yeah, and I was like, man, so analog.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of this movie that, I mean, only exists because of the data technology. I mean, like, the fact that she has to go and fill in, like, a signature card and get it sent in right away to upstairs. I can take a picture of my check nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can deposit it from home with my phone. And, you know, back then it's like, no, we need you to sign it.
Like, yeah, where does this movie fall in Demi Moore's career? Is it like one of the first things that she ever did?
I think A Few Good Men and G.I. Jane were before this.
Oh,
I feel like G.I. Jane was like way later.
Oh, see, now we have to look up Demi Moore too. But at least this one is relevant to the podcast. No, this is before A Few Good Men and Indecent Proposal and Disclosure. So before this, We're No Angels, The Seventh Sign, One Crazy Summer. Yeah, not much. This would have been like her breakout, I guess.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope that it was pretty early on in her career, because here's one scene that really bothers me is the death scene. Her acting, I can't stand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So bad. I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, she's eerily calm. And then she does this, like, weird, like, shaking, and I'm like, what are you
I know. I couldn't tell if she was shaking him or if it was if that was like his he was convulsing, like if that was like the death rattle or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I did read that though that one of Demi Moore's talents, and this is impressive, is she can cry out of either eye on cue.
Wow.
Can she pick which one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah. That. And I was watching for that, right? It's like, I mean, she's got a solid tear game. She has the one heavy drip that comes down, and it's like, boom. But yeah, I was watching for whether there were specifically times that it was only one eye, and there were.
Hmm.
And she cries a lot. I mean, it's... But, I mean, that's impressive. I mean, compare, you know, like, even if you don't believe her in that moment of panic, she does have it going on with a solid crying game.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if we're going to talk about Demi Moore's acting in that scene, we need to talk about Patrick Swayze's. And there's that, to me, there's that scene when he, like, realizes he's dead, and it almost looks like they threw it in afterwards, because it's just a real close-up on his face, and he's got this, like, wide-eyed, like, and it just, like, you know, like, it just looks so awkward.
Yeah.
So awkward. It made me cringe.
Well, if we're going to talk about acting, I mean, let's talk about all three of the mains, because our other one is Oda Mae Brown. Whoopi Goldberg actually won the Best Supporting Actress for that year for this role. So what did you think of Whoopi Goldberg then?
I don't think there's a single scene that she bothered me, but I'm a huge Whoopi fan, so I mean...
Yeah. I agree. Like, I think without Whoopi, this movie, like, would have definitely lost something. Like, I definitely think this movie is better for, and like, I also don't think, like, another person could have played it as well as her. Like, I think it's just that Whoopi personality really brings, and that comedy that she interjects into the movie really brings something to it. It's hard for me to imagine her winning an Oscar for this movie, though.
Yeah.
Because by today's standards, it's like any movie. Like, I can't even imagine Ghost being in the Oscar picture by today's standards. So that's also kind of interesting. But
well, interesting alternate castings I read for Oda Mae though were Jack A. Harris, Patti LaBelle, Tina Turner, or Oprah.
Oprah, wow.
Yeah,
I don't like any of those.
Yeah, yeah, Whoopi was the right choice. Yeah, I don't know whether it was an Oscar-worthy performance, but it was a good performance. It was a solid performance.
Yeah,
because she gets possessed a couple times.
I think her character is kind of like the only one that has a real arc. You know what I mean? Like, who, like, starts with something and then kind of, like, is changed by the end of it. Everybody else is pretty much, well, just the same. Like, I mean, you could make an argument that Carl changes, but it's like, did he really? Because you don't really get to know who he is all that much, and then he just turns out to be duplicitous. But yeah. I think with, like, Oda Mae, she starts as this person who's a con artist, and by the end of it, she seems like she's a better person.
Yeah.
My only thing with the acting, I think, was like, and it's just, there's a scene early on when she's with Molly where she mentions that she can't see Sam, she can only hear him.
Yeah.
And that seems like throughout the movie, sometimes that seems true, but then there's a lot of times where it doesn't, like, it seems pretty clear that she can see him. But that's more of just like, I think, like the director's issue. I thought it would have been interesting if they had added some scenes that kind of showed her talking to no one, like just kind of talking to herself like a crazy person on the street.
There were a few of them, like the one where she, you know, where they're leaving the bank or down the sidewalk, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they show like a distant shot and you see her just talking to herself. So yeah, you're right. I mean, they could have used a few more, but they did have some in there.
Mm-hmm. I do like Tony Goldwyn. I'm a big fan of him from he was in another one of my favorite movies when I was younger called Cuffs with Christian Slater.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a great job. But, you know, I find it interesting though that you brought up that scene where she can see him or she can hear him but doesn't know where he is. She can't see him. I actually isolated that script and I think I want to do a little I used to like this One Piece theater.
Oh, excellent.
So, Colin, I know we just did, and I used to like this One Piece theater on our last episode for Joe Dirt, but I figure we have Marissa here. I know Marissa from theater. That's where I met her. So I figured let's do a little reading to initiate her into this podcast. And so I have sent you guys the script for the scene where Otome is talking to Molly. And I figured let's do a gender swap on this. Colin, okay. We're going to get you to play Otome because I feel like we still need to make sure that, you know. And I will play Molly, and Marissa, we will get you to play the man himself, Patrick Swayze. We will have you play Sam Wheat.
Oh my gosh. I don't... The script appears to be written in, like, Ebonics. Like, Otome's first line, it says, in fact.
Yeah.
Like it's... Interesting choice. I'll make sure I hit all those real good.
Okay, let's do this.
To tell the truth, I don't know how I'm doing it. In fact, confidentially, nothing like this has ever happened to me before. Now, all of a sudden, I can't turn it off. Is this you? Is this him?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hazel eyes, huh? You sound like they'd be blue.
I don't understand. Why did he come back? Why is he still here?
Because he's stuck, that's why. He's between worlds. It happens sometimes when their spirits get out too quick. He thinks he still has stuff to do down here.
Come on, Otome, stop rambling.
Uh-oh, now he's got an attitude.
I do not have an attitude.
We're having a discussion. What do you mean you're not angry? If you weren't angry, you wouldn't be raising your voice like that.
God damn it, Otome!
Baby, that does it. I don't talk to anybody who takes the Lord's name in vain.
Relax, Otome.
You relax. You're the dead one. You want my help? Then you apologize. Nobody talks to me like that. Understand?
Jesus Christ!
Excuse me, girl. Time for me to go.
I don't believe I'm watching this.
Damn it! All right. I apologize. I need you to tell Molly what I'm saying. You gotta tell her word for word.
Monsieur has a message for you.
Molly, you're in danger.
You can't tell her like that. Would you stop moving all over the place? You're making me sick.
Say it!
He's saying you're in danger.
Danger? What do you mean?
I know the man who killed me. Willie Lopez. I know where he lives.
He says he knows the man who killed him. Willie Lopez. He's Puerto Rican.
Write it down. You do it!
Now I'm a secretary?
Prospect Place, apartment 4B?
Hey, that's my neighborhood.
Molly, he's got my wallet and my key. He was in here.
He's got his wallet and key. He was in here.
In here?
You have to go to the police. The mugger wasn't acting alone. It was a setup, Molly. I was murdered.
He says he was set up, that he was murdered. He wants you to go to the police. I'm sorry. I don't want nothing to do with this.
Where are you going?
Don't follow me. I've done all I'm going to do. I'm finished. And I ain't coming back. So don't you come bothering me again because it's over. I mean it. This is it. Have a nice life. Have a nice death. I'm going.
Yes! I used to like this One Piece theater. Right on. Wow, you know, when you do it as a reading like that without the visuals, it really loses some of the charm of the scene in the movie. I was mistaken, though, about the fact that she can't see him wasn't mentioned in that part. It's the part about stop moving around, you're making me sick. That's the line that's in this that I really like. Yeah, I really like the relationship between Sam and Otome. I do have to say that. I think those two do have some really great chemistry and a lot of funny moments.
Part of the reason that I love that scene that we read so much is because of that little relationship where she's like, no, I'm not going to do it. You have to apologize. Like, I just love the sass and the back and forth between the two of them. That's one of my favorite moments between the two characters.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I do also love the subtle little line where, you know, he does keep her up all night singing I'm Henry VIII. And later on, Molly's like, oh, yeah, that's what he did to get me to say yes to him asking me out. So, Colin, as a first time viewer, like, ultimately, were you surprised by the turn in Carl. We started talking a bit about Carl before I took us down the I used to like this One Piece theater rabbit hole. So what did you think about this? You know, did it come as a surprise to you?
It kind of did, actually. I feel stupid saying that.
I don't think you should. I mean, I think that's the intent of the script.
But it kind of did. Like, again, I had no idea that this movie was going to go down the murder route and the conspiracy route. I thought, to be honest, given the way it starts with they talk about like how Carl's like the good buddy and the hired hand and the best friend, that it was going to be one of those things where Sam was going to die and live in the house, and then like Carl and Molly were going to end up together. Like I thought that's the kind of movie that I was in for.
Okay.
So when it turned out that he was actually the one behind the murder, I was like, oh shit.
I see what you did. You got me.
Yeah. But yeah, so I was surprised. I didn't think it was going to go that way. And then, but I mean, once the turn happens, like Tony Goldwyn does a really good job of playing a just like scared, but like not like he's not in control. I wish they would have elaborated a little bit more on like what his situation is.
Yeah, like, who's because he talking to on the phone?
Yeah, like, it seems like he's in trouble, right?
Yeah.
So there is some sympathy to him, but I think they don't really elaborate because they don't want you to feel it. If you felt bad for him too much, it would take away from poor, poor Sam Wheat.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it really is, like, a typical ghost story, but told from the ghost's point of view, which is a fascinating spin to put on a movie. There is a new series out this season. I don't know if either of you have seen it. It's called Ghosts, and it's this couple that inherits a home, and it's haunted by like the ghosts of everyone that's ever lived there. And it's kind of funny because it's a comedy version of some of the things that happen in this movie. Like, seeing them manipulate things in this show is really funny because you see them like screaming, trying to type on a keyboard, just ah, and then it cuts away where you don't see any ghosts and it's absolutely silent, and you see like the keyboard key click, and it's hilarious. You know, it's hilarious the way that they do that. But I mean, you know, in this movie, yeah, I feel like it was stolen from the fact that Sam can learn to, like, touch objects at one point in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I was curious, like, did you guys want to see more in this movie, like, ghost interaction? Like, I kind of liked that scene with the train guy and the scene when he first goes to the hospital and meets that old man. Like, I thought it would have been interesting for him to almost make some ghost friends and that sort of thing, and even to maybe explain like why he didn't go to heaven or whatever.
Well, he just chose to walk away from heaven. I mean, it was his own choice. Yeah, because he I don't know, he was ultimately too curious about what was going on behind him, I guess.
Well, I think they're going along the, like, you know, the lore of ghosts is that their spirits with unfinished business, which makes sense. But in this movie, it's kind of like, yeah, it just seems like he just walks away from the scary light that he doesn't know what it is. But yeah. no one ever really explains. Like, my thought was kind of like, well, was that his only chance until the end? Like, how does he even know that he's going to have another opportunity to go, or is he just stuck there forever type thing?
Yeah, that's one of my main problems now, not before. Like, when I was in love with this movie, I didn't even notice things like this, but that's one of my issues with it now. It's like, there's so many things that aren't explained. Like, why does the light come down at the beginning of the movie and nobody can see him, but at the end the light comes down, oh my god, I can see and hear you? Like, why?
Yeah.
Why does this happen? Why does that happen? And it's there's a lot of things that happen inexplicably, which bugs me.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because we also see the one guy on the operating table that doesn't make it, and he just floats right up.
Yeah, he just gets sucked out.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, would he have had the opportunity to step off the table instead? Like, it came down right on him. Yeah, at least Sam had to walk into it.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Marissa. Like, I think it's tough with these movies that we watch on this show, which are predominantly from the 80s and 90s, because it's definitely like a different, it's like a time of filmmaking when they really didn't care about continuity errors or like lapses in logic, which both makes the movies really fun to watch because you're like, oh, nice. They really just cared about entertaining you. But at the same time, because we're all so geared towards how movies are now, it can also sometimes be aggravating when you're actually trying to critique it, because you're like, what the heck is this?
That's why I said I love most of it now, because yeah, there's little errors in it. I'm just like, oh my god, I can't. Like, why?
One of the weirdest things for me was, like I had mentioned before, a lot of my knowledge of Ghost is based on pop culture references, and somehow I've always put together, like, I thought the clay scene happened when Sam was a ghost.
So did I, and I've, like, seen it.
Yeah, like, I thought I thought that was the thing, like, she would, like, that somehow she had, like, slept with a ghost, and that was, like, a funny, I swear I've seen that made fun of in that way in other shows and movies. So when it was so early in the movie and he was still alive, I was like, wow, this is not at all, that was when I was like, this is not the movie I thought I was watching.
What's that phenomenon where we dropped it in a few episodes?
Yeah,
Mandela effect. Maybe that's what society has Mandela affected this movie, and a lot of people do remember it as Ghost. Because, like I said, I've seen this movie, and for some reason, I'm like, oh yeah, he was alive when they did the pottery scene. Yeah. Patrick Swayze, incidentally, did say that is like the sexiest thing that he's ever filmed, in his own personal opinion. And I'm like, have you seen Roadhouse? Come on, Patrick Swayze. You were sexy in Roadhouse, but...
Dirty Dancing,
yeah, for sure, yeah.
Dirty Dancing, yeah.
They're grinding on each other the entire show.
That's true.
Yeah, no one puts baby in a corner. Come on.
Also, I wanted to point out in the pottery scene that at what point did they stop to wash their hands of the clay? Because I noticed that when they get to the bed, the hands are clean.
Yep.
And I don't think that would have been true. I didn't see any breaks for hand washing, I'm just going to say.
No, it should have come up later that there was a muddy handprint on the couch that they had never gotten off.
Yeah. That would have been incredible. Yeah.
Titanic style, it just, yeah, ends with the clay handprint on the wall.
The scene where she's talking to him, she's like, I picked up your shirts today. She's just sitting there holding a pillow with a clay handprint on it.
Yeah.
or underwear with a clay handprint on it.
Okay, what? Now, here's a segue with underwear. What is the story with the green underwear that she writes her name in?
Yeah,
because
I don't know.
That's one of the things that Oda Mae yells up at her, and then within 2 seconds of her yelling that at Molly, she turns to Sam and she's like, oh, that's a story I would have never forgotten. And it's like, he had time to tell that story? Like,
yeah.
What is the story? And then later on, she mentions it to Carl about... No, he knew about the underwear that I signed my name in, and he's just like, oh, yeah, you know, like that old chestnut, you know, like
we've all heard that one.
Oh, God, if I had a nickel for every time I heard the signing your name in that green pair of panties story, like, it's just, I want to know what that story is, but I guess it could go along with the, you know, story of the handprint on the underwear.
Yeah.
Did the pottery scene live up to all of its hype in pop culture, though, for you, Colin?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a good scene. It's just, to its credit, like, I always say, like, I wish that movies and TV would embrace the sexiness of how sex was portrayed in the 80s and 90s, because now it's just all show and like nothing is left to the imagination. Like, I like how these sex scenes are done, where it's just like you get the build and then it's just like, ah, fade. And then you don't have to like be like gratuitous.
Yeah, it's all kissing and groping and then they drop out of frame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it was Patrick Swayze's sexiest scene. I mean, the fight in Roadhouse where he rips that guy's heart out is I mean, that has to be top notch.
Not heart, throat. Give it oh, give yeah, it throat. The respect.
Throats.
It was a throat pull.
Yeah. yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I did read that apparently the original draft of the script, you know, the part where Oda May lets Sam possess her, and we've got the creepy when you think about it scene.
Yeah.
but apparently that was originally scripted to be a sex scene.
Ew! No!
Yeah.
That was a scene that was difficult to wrap. Like, that's one of those ones, like you said, Sean, when you think about it too much, it's like, no, it's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I'll go to Seinfeld. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it is really weird when you think about it from the outside. Like, I don't know.
Even in the scene itself, there's the point where he's, like, touching her lips.
Yeah.
And you're like...
Oda May has, like, huge, long nails.
Yeah. And also, like, Molly, is something happened that is blinding...
Right?
Blinding her from the fact that this woman is just going, ah, like,
yeah.
This is the scene in the movie that I despise the most.
Okay.
All of these reasons, because here's my thing. The whole scene leading up to it and the scenes after, he's pushing people. He can touch people, and yet he has to go inside of Whoopi Goldberg in order to touch her and have this super creepy moment, which, frankly, if it was me, like, would mean nothing to me, because I'm not touching Sam. Sam's not touching me. Like, that doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah. What was the point of it other than to weaken him so that he's not there for the first part of the fight? And just, like, why? Like, why was this necessary? Because it's just... Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also thought it would have been more meaningful and kind of profound if the point of him learning how to touch was for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
If that was going to be the payoff where he's, like, you know, spurred on by their love and emotion, he manages to find the will to, like, will himself to actually, like, touch her with his own being or whatever and that kind of stuff. Yeah, like, I thought...
he makes the penny float. That takes major concentration.
But he can't touch her.
Yeah.
But I mean, if it had ended up being a sex scene and they went that route, it would have also made for an awkward visual where, like, what does that look like?
Yeah.
But
good thing I brought my strap on with me. But, you know, the one thing I do love in that scene is the perfectly timed needle drop of Unchained Melody, as soon as, like, it goes from being Whoopi and all of a sudden it's Patrick there, and it's like, oh my, oh god, I love it. Just like,
I mean, I mean, I've heard that song before, but there's something about when you see it in, like, I'll never be able to hear that song again without picturing Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore making googly eyes at each other in my mind.
Have either of you ever tried pottery?
No, but I've always wanted to.
See, I have the exact same answer as you, Marissa. Yeah, it's like, why haven't I ever done this? Because I just always forget that it's something that I want to try, but they make it look fun.
Yeah, I remember doing, like ceramics stuff in school and, like, industrial arts, but I always definitely wanted to try doing something with that lathe or whatever, with this little spinny thing.
With
and
the
see,
wheel,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, molding it.
Yeah, because, yeah, I had in my art 10 or whatever, yeah, I remember making a ceramic box, but, yeah, there was nothing where it was clay on a wheel. Just always wanted to try it, yeah.
Well, it's never too late.
That's right.
I'm sure the City Arts Center has some sort of pottery class.
Yeah, people.
He wouldn't say that. Sometimes it is too late.
Yeah, that is true. Sometimes it is too late. Yeah, you do feel bad for Sam. They have that scene right before they go out where they're talking about, like, why don't you ever tell me you love me, blah blah blah, and he's like, you know, I just you know, every time something good in life happens, just gets taken away from me, blah. Like, They really wanted to drive it home that something bad is about to happen here.
Well, I did do a ditto tally. There are 9 dittos in the movie.
I feel like there should be more.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was a little bit choked when Sam is like leaving to go to heaven. That, I mean, I get that she has to say ditto, but it's like, you should have just said you loved him. Like, that's going to be the last time you see him, and you're just going to say ditto.
Yeah.
I think at that point, ditto means more to them than I love
him. I guess.
It's like an as-you-wish scenario at that point.
Yeah, perfect example, yeah. I did notice, though, when Sam goes to Whoopi Goldberg for the first time or whatever, and he starts telling her that he needs her to do this and he needs her to do that, and he'll never leave her alone, and you know, he ends up doing his I'm Henry the Eighth, I am, and all that sort of stuff. You know, the one thing Sam never did try? Please. He never once said please. He never once asked her nicely. Like, I don't know if I like Sam all of a sudden. Like, does Sam deserve to go to heaven at the end when he brings about two people's deaths? Sure, he doesn't pull the trigger, but come on, he pokes them in the ribs long enough for the one guy to get hit by the truck and ends up dodging the thing dodging the hook so that Carl meets his end. So, I don't know, it's just, does he deserve the full heaven treatment at the end?
I mean, he's still a hero at the end of the day. Can't take it from him.
Can't take it from him. Yeah. You're dead, I mean, Willie.
Yeah. Although, Sam, you're right. Sam is kind of like an asshole. Like, even when he's messing with Carl in the office with the computer and all that, like, he could have just been satisfied with the fact that he stole all his money and screwed him over and all that. He didn't have to go rub it in.
Start typing on his computer. Yeah. Murderer.
Driving him insane.
Yeah.
I was not expecting the way that the bad, like those weird shadow demons that come up and take the bad people. They gave me Christmas Carol vibes.
Yeah.
You know, like in the Christmas Carol when I'm thinking of like the Alistair Sim movie. But like when Marley shows Scrooge the people who like failed to do whatever good in life, and they're like screaming at people trying to make a difference. That's what those shadow guys reminded me of. And it's just so creepy how they suck in and then come out. And
it was definitely like a cool idea. I thought, like, I thought, you know, for 1990, when it came to things like the shadow monsters and all the different passing through people effects, they were not too bad for special effects. There were a couple that were really poor, like him reaching through a door for the first time. That one was one that was, a little...
Well, it's so staged, he's like...
Does this hurt him? Like, why is this such an effort?
Well, I mean, the old guy does warn him that it's going to be weird the first time, and I mean, his color starts changing. Yeah, why don't you just walk through? I don't know, I guess because you just aren't used to the idea of walking through. Yeah, but I've always wondered, why don't you walk fall through floors then?
Right.
Like, yeah, that makes...
Like, there was one point in one of the subway fights where he's fighting the subway ghost, and he ends up getting thrown through, like, all the stanchions, all the bars that are on the subway, and he gets thrown through the door, but then he ends up landing hard against the next train, and it's like, well, why did that one stop him? Shouldn't he just be sliding forever at this point?
Or, like, yeah, he would have been racing with the train. Because, like, technically, when he gets thrown, he turns, like, incorporeal. So if the train is moving at, this is, like, some weird physics math problem, but if the train is moving, if the train is moving faster than he was being thrown, then technically the train should just go all the way through him and he should end up at the end on the tracks.
And what time do they get to St. Louis? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I thought the weird one for me was when the nurse or the hospital person with the gurney goes through him, and I didn't pick up until the second watch, I think, that he's seeing like his brain matter and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was odd.
But I mean, like, even like the part where he's fighting Willie as Willie's going up the stairs and he's just swinging through him. I mean, you could tell that that they were effects, but I thought for 1990, I'm gonna give the special effects a thumbs up for this. And I thought that for 1990, they did a solid job on effects. So, I mean, that's kind of...
Yeah. The only one that actually really, where I was like, this seems odd, is their final kiss. Like,
yes!
Would it have been so hard to just have Sam all glowy and they actually just kissed? Because the way it looks is like they filmed it. Like, I'm just imagining Demi Moore was just sitting there with her, like, head tilted and her lips out. And then they filmed Patrick Swayze, like, coming forward. But, like, it's clear that they were filmed separately.
Yeah.
Right? And so that, like, just imagining it. And it just doesn't look as good as you want for their final star-crossed lover passionate embrace.
Yeah.
I think part of the problem, too, though, is that I think it's so obvious because there's no lip movement. They're literally just leaning forward and just, like, smushing their faces together, quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not, like, kissing motion, I guess. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. It would be... I mean, I guess that's one thing you don't think about is, like, the main component of a kiss is the pressure. So it's like, how do you act a fake kiss without pressure?
Yeah.
You bring in a glass ball that...
Honestly, they probably would have been better served to just have a, like, yeah, translucent ball of some sort that she could have went against.
Yeah.
Green screen ball.
Yeah. Green screen balls. Have either of you... This is a trope in movies I don't understand, is the couple that sits in bed and reads together. Are either of you in bed readers with your partners?
I'm not a reader, period, and I don't have a partner, so no.
Okay.
I mean, I read in bed, but I don't, like, read out loud to my wife.
Okay. Yeah, I always find it interesting, the trope of the getting ready for bed thing with spouses in movies, where it's just like, that's always what it is, them sitting in bed, perfectly upright, against the against the headboard, like it's not freezing cold or anything. That's always bothered me in movies. I don't know.
Well, it's just, like, so not realistic, because, I mean, I don't know, but I'm just like... I basically stay up watching TV until it's time to go to bed. Sometimes I read before, but it's like once I get to bed, it's usually I'm just like in bed, go to sleep.
Yep. Yeah, that's me too. Yeah.
No long talks about the world events and all that good stuff. I'm still waiting to see how Sean is going to... This has to be a record for us not have gone to sponsorship corner yet.
I know!
I'm getting nervous. I'm like, when is it going to happen? Like, has he forgotten?
Well, maybe you just gave me my segue because I have no other way in. Let's go to sponsorship corner. It was a tough one. The closest I got to segueing into this one this week was when I was talking about the subway ghost teaching him to be able to manipulate objects. Because in that scene, they are kicking a Mountain Dew can. But Ghost is small. So here we go. Always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Ghost is brought to you by Ferrari and Ford, Reebok Shoes, Pepsi and Mountain Dew, Pall Mall Cigarettes, Nine Lives Cat Food, Rosario Grocery, Durley Farms, the band The Who, and the musical Cats, plus the fictional companies of Sister Oda Mae Brown's spiritual advisor, the law offices of Archer & Archer, and Market Security Bank & Trust. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
I feel like a burden has been
lifted off this episode.
Weight has been lifted off my shoulders.
I mean, yeah, in there, I mean, I did mention the Reebok shoes. That's the special box that Molly has aside for Sam's stuff. I love how she just can't part with anything, but somehow all of Sam's stuff still fits in this one box. Even though her personality is she can't part with any of his shit. Like, why isn't all of Sam's stuff still there? How did he get anything away from her?
Especially because she's kept Rolaids, of all things.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the very obvious dance moves that Patrick Swayze gets to bust out in this movie. You know, when he's jumping from one subway car to another, and he does it in like this full graceful jeté across from one car to the other, or he does that through the door as well. Or there's the part where they're hauling the giant angel sculpture into the loft apartment, and he swings up and does the kick out and like lands all gracefully.
Got to put those moves to use. Did he start as a dancer?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Is that how he got Dirty Dancing?
Yeah, and he's married to a dancer as well, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, and they had like a whole dance studio franchise thing going on as well or something.
Hmm. Nice.
One of the surprise appearances that I was not expecting in this movie that I was very excited to see was Steven Root as the cop at one point. And as a big Office Space fan... You know, see, and the fact that I've been watching the Book of Boba Fett and Steven Root shows up in that as well, it was very exciting for me to see Steven Root in a very understated moment. Cullen's, the look on your face is blank. I was wondering.
I know who you're talking, and I was, you've put the piece in the puzzle for me, because I saw that guy, and I was just like, what do I know him from? But I couldn't place his face, but now that you mentioned Office Space, I'm like, oh, that's the dude. Gotcha. Yeah,
you took my stapler.
There we go.
Yeah, I've got a couple of alternate castings as well here, if you want to hear them, for Sam.
Okay, I'm interested.
Because originally, director Jerry Zucker thought that Patrick Swayze was wrong for the part, because he had just seen Roadhouse.
It's always the way.
These are in alphabetical order, so, and there's a number of them, but we've got Kevin Bacon, Alec Baldwin, Nicolas Cage, Kevin Costner, Tom Cruise, who interestingly was in Days of Thunder at the same time in theaters, Johnny Depp, David Duchovny, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, Tom Hanks, Paul Hogan, Crocodile Dundee himself, Kevin Kline, Dennis Quaid, Mickey Rourke, John Travolta, and Bruce Willis were all people that were considered for this part before they went back to Swayze.
That sounds like every they just had every male actor in Hollywood at the time was on deck.
Anyone and everyone could play it.
Pretty much. The one that I found funniest, though, out of all of them is that Bruce Willis passed on it because he thought it would be too cheesy being a ghost for most of the movie. And now, spoiler alert to anyone who hasn't seen Sixth Sense, but...
That's hilarious.
Oh, I thought that was priceless.
It's kind of funny because that's literally almost any movie from, I'm going to say, 1986 to 1994. If you look at an alternate cast, I feel like they all have the exact same alternate casting. It's like those were the only male actors in Hollywood at the time, seemingly. It's always Dennis Quaid, Tom Cruise, Johnny Depp. Mickey Rourke shows up fairly often as well.
Yeah, but Mel Gibson does too.
I'm surprised Michael J. Fox isn't there. But my favorite to think about would have definitely been Kevin Bacon, because I just love Kevin Bacon. But also, like, as far as like on-screen couples go, I cannot imagine Demi Moore and Nicolas Cage together. Like that, like I would be baffled. I almost wish it would have happened so I could just know what that would have looked like. I can't. Yeah, it's breaking my mind a little bit.
You know, the funny thing is though that if you really think about it, so many of these actors have movies that are similar to Ghost in their resume. I mean, like Alec Baldwin has Beetlejuice. Kevin Bacon has Hollow Man. I know that's not a ghost, but it's Invisible Man, right? Nicolas Cage has City of Angels. Kevin Costner has Field of Dreams. Yeah. Johnny Depp has... Well, Johnny Depp's just...
He has dark Shadows. I don't know.
Johnny Depp has Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, those are all fucking ghost movies.
I guess.
Because that's the only thing Disney can think of, apparently. Go see Jungle Cruise.
Jungle Cruise.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, they all have seem to have one of those movies where they have some sort of, like, ghost-like aspect. So it's kind of interesting to think that, well, they all got their own.
Yeah.
Patrick Swayze got this one. What one standout for me, though, I have to say, is Vincent Schiavelli, who plays the Subway Ghost. I really like the Subway Ghost stuff.
Yeah, I would have liked more of him.
Yeah.
As kind of like, I wish he would have appeared. I mean, they kind of fill a lot of Sam's time with Oda Mae. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been cool to almost like add the Subway Ghost into that trifecta of he's kind of Sam's guide on the other side of life.
Yeah.
No, oh, yeah, that would have been definitely an interesting way to go with it for sure. His bad angel. The old man was his good angel, and then this guy follows him around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, there is the irony with him that he has his one line of, oh, I would give anything for if I could have one drag of the cigarette, and he died from lung cancer.
What a downer.
Let that be a lesson to you kids. Yeah. I do have one more alternate casting. The role of Molly, Nicole Kidman, was originally approached, but they decided she was not a big enough star. And then once again, I will say, ironically, Days of Thunder was in theaters at the exact same time, and arguably that was the movie that made her a star. So, you know, I feel like she could have probably done the same for Ghost.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine Nicole Kidman doesn't have that Demi Moore softness. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's just like Demi Moore has this like
vulnerability.
Yeah, especially like back then, she had this like sweetness to her that I find Nicole Kidman literally the only thing I've really ever seen her in was, especially that era, was Batman Forever, and in that movie she's like very much just like, I don't know, she's more just like kind of hard and edgy and just not right for this character.
That's the only alternate casting, though, for Molly. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, though. There's a certain, like, I don't know, sophisticated. I don't know. I'm not a huge Nicole Kidman fan, to be honest. So
it's surprising to me that Demi Moore was the only one. I would have thought, like, who are all the other mainstays of that era? Like, I mean, none of them are even coming to mind. I'm like,
Phoebe Cates.
Yeah, I was like, I was like, no, it's too close. Like, Jennifer Connelly, basically those three, they all seemingly interchangeable.
Oh, here's a question: when Sam first dies, and they wheel his body out of the room, and they just leave it in the hallway, like we just talked about the old man, is that something they would do? Is just, let's just park this body here for a little while? I feel like that's something that gets an express trip to the morgue.
That's really funny. I never thought of that, but that's such a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think dead bodies get left around laying in the hallway of a hospital.
No. I mean, I've been in a hospital before. I've never come across it.
That you know of.
That I know of. Good point.
Next time you're at the hospital, if you just see, just
take a little,
just, you know, if you see a gurney, just, you know, take a little check, maybe.
Hold, empty? Yeah.
Hold a mirror under their nose.
I have to say, I found it quite hilarious when the old guy looks through the dead body, if you will, but he literally just shoves his head into like his head space. Doesn't turn his head or anything, just looks straight into the blanket and goes, oh, shot, hey? Even though he was shot in the chest, I'm like, how would you know that?
Yeah.
I also like that he's like, got shot, huh? That'll do it.
Yeah, I
did
chuckle at that.
Yeah.
I also, I felt like when Carl dies, the blood that comes out was a little, that seemed excessive to me. I don't, like, it was a little explosive almost.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a delayed explosion, too. Like, the thing lands in his chest, and then, like almost a second later, it's like, splash! Like, someone was laid on the squib.
Yeah. I couldn't help when Carl shows up when he's a ghost, and Sam sees him, and he's like, oh, Carl. to just, in my mind, I just heard Rick from The Walking Dead, just, Carl! Oh, Carl! My boy!
You know, one thing I did read, and this was absolutely fascinating to me, the chase scene at night, like when he first gets shot and chases the guy down the street, it was actually a very cold night, and they had Patrick Swayze chew ice before each take so that his breath wouldn't show on film. I never knew this was a thing at all. And I mean, as a confirmed non-scientist, I can say that I think the science holds up.
Well, I know what I'm doing tomorrow night in the Edmonton cold.
Be making ice cubes all day.
When Oda Mae does get, like, when all the ghosts show up at Oda Mae's and Oda Mae gets possessed by that one guy, oh, what was his name? Otis, I think it was.
Yeah, I would say Otis.
Yeah. As soon as she opens her eyes as Otis, she looks across the table, you know, and he's like, I can't hardly see. And there you are. Damn, girl, what did you do to your hair? And it's like, why is he so surprised by this? Because as a ghost, he's been standing around for hours. He would have seen the hair. Why is he so shocked that his wife did something to her hair?
Mm-hmm.
No, just a lot of blank stares at that one. Okay, I'll just leave that question out to the universe then. everyone that's listening can go, yeah, why is that? That is an odd thing. Yeah, there are a few inconsistencies that don't hold up in this movie, that's for sure.
My other favorite one is when when he's getting tossed in the subway car, and he goes through, and you can see that there's a person sitting right by the door that he gets pushed through, and then he comes, and the other ghost like smashes it open, and then nobody reacts. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Windows just blow out all the time in New York.
Yeah, right. Just another Tuesday.
Well, there we go. That is Ghost. Oh, boy. Now, Colin, Marissa, on IMDb, it scored 7.1 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 52. On Rotten Tomatoes likes it a lot more. It has 74% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 80%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a ghostly poke in the ribs, hit us with some reviews.
Okay. I'm going to start with this funny review I found on Google from Bong Yum, who gave the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, I watched this movie when I was in kindergarten and just started learning English alphabet at school, English being my third language. I couldn't understand the dialogues. I enjoyed the movie mainly for the ghost and supernatural things. As a child, I also felt something in my heart, which I now know is love. I happened to watch it again yesterday. Such a beautiful love story. I have been in love with this movie for the last 30 years.
That's so cute. Yeah. Which I now know is love.
Yeah.
See, there's the estrogen coming out here, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Julie E. says, 5 out of 5 stars, I have watched this movie countless times and it always comes across as a fresh and new film to me, and always invokes emotional reactions from me. I think the directing of Patrick Swayze in the next to the final scene is brilliantly done, and Goldberg adds so much humor to the movie that without her, would have set the wrong tone.
You made me suddenly do some like mental gymnastics there. I'm like, the next to the last scene. Or the last of the next scene. And it's like, which one is that? Is that the one where he's like yelling at Carl? Is that the one? Because yeah. I'm assuming the last one is the one where he goes up to heaven, right?
I think so, yeah.
There wasn't anything after that, was there?
Nope. Maybe it's the way he turns away from the camera when Carl gets killed and the blood splatters.
Yeah.
Magical. Arseny V. says, 4 out of 5 stars, loved it as a preteen, and to my great surprise, it actually holds up. A few minor incongruencies and perhaps some depth sacrificed to the entertainment gods, but aged real well nonetheless.
Okay.
Melanie M. wrote a review, 5 out of 5 stars in all caps. I'm not going to yell, but I'm just going to say it. This is a classic, iconic masterpiece. Anyone who gives less than 1 star should not be allowed to even be a critic of movies, because this is what the movies are all about. Love, passion, and some of the best acting of all time. Moore is truly amazing, and you can't keep your eyes off her. Whoopi and Patrick, come on! This is the real deal.
Okay. Nice.
Passionate.
Very,
very passionate. You know it's passionate when it's all caps.
Exactly.
I really like this one. It's from Thomason B., who says, 4 out of 5 stars, after watching a GIF of Whoopi Goldberg saying, "You in danger, girl," I was inspired to rewatch the entire movie during a sleepless night. It did not disappoint in awesomely cheesy special effects. Whoopi is effing hilarious. And then the last one, ending on a sour note, it's that Tatsuhito K gives the movie 2.5 out of 5 stars and says, half a star for effort. This is a peculiar film. It starts out as romantic fantasy, but then it ends up being an action thriller with ghosts in it. It tries to be more than just one thing, and as a result, it turns into a mess. Swayze and Moore make a likable couple, and the film has some interesting ideas, but the whole conspiracy mystery aspect of it doesn't quite work, and Whoopi Goldberg's over-the-top performance took me out of the film. Ghost is perfectly watchable, but I kind of wish that the movie focused more on the love story aspect and not so much on the mystery or comedic aspects.
Huh.
I pretty solidly disagree with that assessment. Yeah. I think without the comedic aspect and Whoopi Goldberg, this movie would be not so great.
Yeah, Whoopi makes it for me, but she makes a lot of movies for me. One of my favorites of hers is Jumpin' Jack Flash, which I'm obsessed with.
I've never seen that.
Oh my god, so good.
Well, yeah, so 7.1 and 80 from audiences and 74 and 52 from critics. Let's go over to Marissa. You started the show off by saying, on this viewing, not so much. So what do you think of Ghost? Like, how was it that this, you know, compared to what you remember of Ghost?
It definitely didn't meet up to what I remembered it being. Like, if I had not rewatched it and I would have given you a rating today, it would have been 10 out of 10. But rewatching it, I'd say, you know, around a 7 to 8. Mostly, again, because of the logistical errors in it, the continuity errors. I'm so much more observant of those now, and so I'm a little bit judgy of those now. Also, beautiful cinematic moments, like where the moment where they're pulling in that statue and then they do that little mirror trick and it, like, totally screws with your vision, and you're we're over here, okay, cool. Like, I love those little moments, and the sentiment of the story is beautiful. It's still a wonderful love story, just, you know, those little errors that needed some fine-tuning and explaining the whys, that's all. So only a couple of points dinged off of that for me. So yeah, I'd still rate it about an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, it's fascinating that you give such props to the, like, some of the cinematic choices, some of the directorial choices, some of the art direction, just because of the fact that the man that made this movie is known for Naked Gun and Airplane. And to think that it's very much like how Todd Phillips went from movies like Road Trip to The Joker. And it's like, oh my god, like these comedic directors have some really good ideas because they're willing to go for it. And I agree with you, there are some very interesting directorial choices that work really well.
Mm-hmm.
Colin, what about you? It's your first viewing of Ghost. What did you think of it?
I liked it more than I think. For me, it's gonna take a few more watches, but I liked it. It's definitely, it's not the movie that I thought I was going to be watching. It's mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting that one reviewer said, the mystery crime thriller aspect of it. I thought it was going to be kind of what I talked about before, more where, like, the guy dies and basically, like, Cyrano de Bergerac helps his friend get his girl or something like that.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Like, I thought, and I thought it was going to be more of a drama, if that makes sense, based on what I've seen. And and really more about, I don't know, I guess, like, kind of helping, like, Demi Moore's character, like, learn to love again. Like, I thought it was going to be one of those movies, too. So, yeah, it's just kind of, it was a weird watch for me because it just wasn't at all what I expected. I did end up enjoying it. I really liked Whoopi Goldberg. I ended up liking the comedic aspect of it a lot. And, yeah, I think I would give it probably, like, a 7 out of 10 type score. I think it's one of those movies where, yeah, like we talked about before, if you really break it down too much, it kind of falls apart. But, like, as a movie, just, like, when you think about it on surface level, it's entertaining. It has fun moments. I like Patrick Swayze, and I basically like all the I felt all the actors in the movie do a good job.
Yeah,
at playing their characters, and so yeah,
even Demi Moore. You hear that, Marissa?
Even Demi Moore. I just want to clarify. It was just that one scene.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. It was just that one scene where I felt she was just really eerily calm, almost.
Yeah.
Threw me off. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, but rewatching it, you'll pick up on those little subtle hints about like Carl's character, like when he's like, "Oh, let me do these for you," or like little thing. That's the really nice part about watching it, is you pick up on all these subtle hints. So, highly recommend watching it again for sure.
Yeah, because that was actually, I think, on the first watch. Like even when he comes in and is talking to Molly and is basically telling her like she's crazy. On the first watch, before you know what's about to happen, it kind of seems sincere. And then all of a sudden you find out, oh, he's a snake, and then you're like, oh, shit. But,
Yeah, like, you read that last review, and it seemed like that guy was basically saying that this movie needs to pick a side. Mm-hmm. You either gotta be this, or you gotta be this, but there's no room for everything. And I think it's the blend of the humor, the blend of the thriller story, and the blend of the love story that ties together an enjoyable time, because you're not just watching, like, if it was all just Unchained Melody the whole fucking time, eventually it would be like, okay, I'm done with this movie. There's only so much sap I can handle.
Yeah.
In a story like this, because it's like, what is a ghost gonna do? Like, they can't be together. They literally cannot be together.
Yeah.
Why didn't he possess Molly? That's what he should have done. Just touch himself all over. But anyway. But no, with this movie, yeah, that guy is saying pick a side. And for me, it's like, no, that's the charm of this movie. And I think that's what brings it together. And I still had a good time, but it was a lot sillier to me in moments than it used to be. That's for sure. There was a lot of, oh yeah, that, or like I can get on the 7 train. That's a good place to be sitting. It's fun. It's still Ghost.
It'll always be a classic.
But it'll never be Dirty Dancing, right?
No, it won't. It really won't. Sorry. And you know what? I think those different components in it balance it. I think those components just needed a little bit more blending, because it's almost like Whiplash, where you're like, oh, how sweet. Oh, you're going to hell.
Yeah.
I think we could probably go up a point or two if those things were kind of blended a little bit more.
Yeah. Okay. Blur the edges.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there we go. That is Ghost, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big, huge thank you to our special guest, Marissa Dingle. Marissa, if people want to find you online, or if there's anything you want to talk about, now's your opportunity. What do you have to tell those good folks out there?
Not so shameless plug. Aside from all of my regular stuff, I during the pandemic started making some masks. So you can find me on Facebook, Masked by Marissa, M-A-S-K-D. They are 4-layer, 2 layers of interfacing, 2 layers of fabric with nose piece and adjustable ear straps. And they're $10 each and super comfortable. So if you're looking, find me.
And I will plug them as well, because during our production of Elf, she made a bunch of Elf masks for anyone in the cast that wanted to buy one of them, and I did purchase one. They are very comfortable masks, and the wire is still holding up for me, so
that's awesome.
That's fantastic news. Thank you so much, though, for joining us, bringing us a little love this Valentine's Day, Marissa.
I appreciate you having me. I hope to be back again.
Absolutely.
Well, definitely. We'll keep you in mind for Romeo and Juliet.
Yay! My sister totally tuned into that. She was the one that introduced me to that movie, and we're diehards.
Nice.
I was gonna say, or Dirty Dancing, if we want to do more Swayze.
Then I'll take either or both.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just tell your friends. Word of mouth is so big and huge, and that was a terrible one. Word of mouth is huge for a podcast trying to build an audience. Or if you want to go above and beyond, just go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. A little review just helps drive us up the charts and helps us get noticed. Or become a producer of the show. Become an executive producer, just like executive producer Joshua Blum, who got a shout out because he went over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and became part of our Patreon family.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, read some cool bios about me and Sean, and find all our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. Go on there, give us some likes, comments, shares, all that good stuff. And if you want to, you can also email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. And here's a special treat for anyone that's still listening after the credits. A little I Used to Like This One blooper reel.
Will Sam learn how to poltergeist in time to protect Molly not only from Carl's murderous agenda, but also his far too soon considering she's your dead friend best bet. Far. Sorry. I'm going to start that again. Will Sam learn how to poltergeist in time to protect Molly not only from Carl's murderous agenda, but also his far too soon considering she's your dead best... Okay, one more time. Will Sam learn how to poltergeist in time to protect Molly not only from Carl's murderous agenda, but also his far too soon considering she's your dead friend's best girl sexual advances? Welcome to... I Used to Like This One. All right, let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One. Sean will have fun editing that.
Oh, wow, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was wicked.
Right on.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.